This is episode 47 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
The port was alive with strange faces. It was dawn by the time he found an old salt willing to part with a vessel for what bullion he had left. A cutter with a Bermuda rig called the Merciful. Its sails ragged and ripped, its compass cracked, its rotten hull just barely able to cut the breakers. But it would be enough to make his escape. It wasn't for another hour, when he was a mile from the docks, that his thoughts turned back to her. He imagined her alone. By now, she would have searched the house and found it empty. She had suspected it all along, and now she knew he was a coward. A coward dressed in the uniform of a brave man. Brave enough to cross two oceans and a continent to find her, to fight countless enemies, and yet, in the end, he was terrified. He was terrified of her. To lie beside her, to be comforted by her as he wept, to show her he was small, for her to know that and touch his cheek and whisper words softly into his ear. All of that was a nightmare. All he knew to do was run. He took a deep breath of the air, tasting the salt on his tongue, and closed his eyes, leaning into the spray as the Merciful picked up speed and sailed for the horizon. He was alone, and all was well.
From Cranston, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the show The Leftovers on HBO. We're still here, and so are you. So let's talk about the most powerful man in the world and his identical twin brother. Suddenly I'm hidden, it's the darkness of the dawn, and your friends are gone, and your friends won't come, so show me where you fit. Hello, everyone. Welcome. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I'm going to have a tough time with this episode. I'm not going to lie. This one cut very deep, and this was a very, very personal experience for me. So if I blubber like an idiot to you, the podcast listener, or to those of you who are on Facebook Live watching us right now, I'm already tearing up through the intro, and you can hear me sniffling now, which is really embarrassing. But it's the case, it's the truth, and we're going to talk about it. And we're gonna get through it together, which is why we have podcasts and why we're all here in this big, beautiful community together. So, what do you think, my darling?
What's your personal story that relates to this episode?
Well, we're going to get into that.
You just have banter, so I'm just taking your lead.
No, I know. Why don't we give your Damon rating first?
Okay.
For everybody that was listening, let's give the Damon rating.
And so people don't think I'm a heartless, cruel, cold person. Blake's a Pisces, so I'm just putting that out there. He's the much more emotional of us two. I do have feelings. I do also hold my itchay together. Not that that's bad. I love that Blake is emotional, right?
I would hope so, because you're stuck with me forever.
I love you. We're a good balance. So I just don't want people to be like, why is Mary not crying?
She doesn't have the connection to this story that I think that I do. So
no.
But we'll get into
that. I'm a little lost, to be honest. I thought it was a great episode. I thought it was such a great episode that I am once again giving it a 5. I know. No one is shocked. I've been like throwing out fives like it's nobody's business. But yeah, I mean 5. I don't need to explain myself.
I'm going the full 108 on this one. This is 100.
Look at you.
This is a 108 Damon episode for me, and I think that's actually the first time I've ever given out a 108 rating. And because this episode, like if you remember what I said about Certified and about G'day Melbourne, how they had everything.
Melbourne.
Those episodes had everything that makes The Leftovers what it is. A little bit of mysticism, love, anger, hatred, the hotel, you know, a comedy. It had everything that you could ever ask for in The Leftovers, and it is quite literally. I'll make a good Parks and reference here. Quite literally,
literally,
the I would say the perfect Leftovers episode.
Wow.
And it's funny because, you know, for anyone who doesn't watch Leftovers, they look at this and be like, what the hell is going on? Like, what?
People who even watch this
But people that, like, people that don't watch it would be like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, not at all.
It's utter nonsense. And even those people who do watch it, kind of like what you said, you have to have a very specific way of watching television. And like all of us, I can't say nerds, all of us amazing people.
There we go.
All of us amazing people.
There we go.
Have that specific way of watching this television show. And that's why I think a lot of people really appreciated it. So that's why I'm giving the full 108 to this one. And again, my first 108 reference.
I love it.
What do we got on Facebook, kiddo?
Let's see what we've got. I had to actually make my screen bigger because I'm blind and I don't want to wear my glasses because of okay, Claudia Matthews says, this show is always 100 in my heart. Definitely giving this one 5 Damons. After the last 6 episodes, we get double the Kevin. Hell yes. Plus, who else couldn't stop laughing, crying, and shaking their heads in confusion / relief? I'm emotionally done for the rest of the year.
Charlie Campbell says 5 Damons as well. Kevin Sr. sitting on the roof and let down after nothing happened was an awesome bookend to the season 3 premiere. Kevin's true fears have been realized. Is he going after Nora? Will he need to go visit her into the afterlife to say goodbye?
Oh.
I can't wait to see how it all ends, but I don't want to let go of this show.
Never let go, Jack. Never let go. Do we even have a Titanic clip?
No, I don't.
See? How sad is that?
I probably should.
Never let go. And then she lets go. Jerk. Rebecca Flood says, an episode that made me laugh, cry, shout, yell, WTF, and leaves me staring at the screen dumbfounded way past the end of the crisis. It is a definite 5 Damons. I think she meant by the end of the credits.
Yeah.
I'm so confused. Once again, Ron Burgundy.
oh, wait. Hold on.
I read.
I'm Ron Burgundy?
I got that now.
I read exactly what people write. Rebecca says that she is so confused, but in the best possible way. One more episode to go. Ugh, my heart is going to be ripped out of my chest in a week's time.
Mandy Taylor on Twitter says 5 Damons. Well, they're not going to go to that length. Even with ripping one's own heart out, I'll be laughing until the next episode because of that line.
I didn't get that one.
Let's play Figure Out That Title.
I didn't get that one.
Oh.
Like later.
What do you mean?
They wouldn't go to that length.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't get that joke. I didn't get it until a little while later.
Well, I think that was probably the whole point. It's dry comedy. You sit there and
they
go,
make penis jokes about Justin Theroux the entire series. It's not dry. It's right in my face, and I was so overwhelmed by a penis shelf.
And the
that I couldn't even get a joke.
Oh my god!
Twice.
And that's the beauty of what they've done with Justin Theroux. They've like totally ranked on his schlong the entire
time. They
were
like, here's those sweatpants.
Yeah.
Here you go.
All right. Whoa. We're getting way ahead of ourselves here. Way ahead of ourselves. What are we talking about here for
sweatpants? Figure out that title.
The most powerful man in the world and his twin brother.
Okay.
What do you got? This is your segment.
So the most powerful man in the world is often what they refer to the president as, but also like biblical figures, I guess.
Sure.
Because we don't know who he is. Are you the president? Are you Jesus? What's going on? We have no idea. And his twin brother, because God, aka whatever his name is,
David Burton.
David Burton said something about Jesus having a twin. And so now that was put into perspective. So, you know, powerful man. Whatever. There you go.
Great job.
Done.
Way to go, kiddo.
Religious and political.
Hey, at least Bible camp worked out at least once for you.
Father Abraham,
and it's time to reheat the sons had Father leftovers. Abraham.
I'm going to play that song probably in the last episode. We should probably have all my Bible camp songs up here.
Oh, my goodness. A lot of people on Facebook are actually saying, did you hear the thunk? Each time the penis went down onto the penis measurer.
Can we call it something else?
The thwap?
No, can we call his member?
Oh, so you weren't referring to the sound. You're just referring to
to his anatomy, because I just feel bad. I'm sharing this on Facebook Live on like my regular personal wall.
We've already we've already said that that is a mistake after the lion sex cult.
I don't know why I did it again. Maybe I should unshare it.
Oh, man. That is great. All right. So the details for this episode, it was written by one Damon Lindelof and Nick Cuse, who you should remember his name because he is the son of Carlton Cuse, who was the co-showrunner of Lost along with Damon Lindelof. He, Nick Cuse, was an uncredited staff writer since season 2 began.
How do you get uncredited?
Well, you're just there and you're helping write. It's like a slightly below story editor.
Are you paid?
Yes, you're paid. But your name doesn't necessarily go to the writing credit. You're just aiding. But then he became a story editor in season 3. We've already discussed story editor, what that means. And he was also the writer of International Assassin. So it is apropos that he wrote this episode as well.
You. Big words.
I know. Directed by Craig Zobel, and also a returning member of The Leftovers. But before that, he directed some movies called Z for Zachariah. Fantastic movie. Please check it out. Also, Compliance.
I've
very
trippy.
I've
never seen it before.
I'm not going to say just as trippy as International Assassin or this one, but very cool movie. He also directed an episode of American Gods on Stars, the new show. And he also directed another episode of Outcast, the other Robert Kirkman show on Cinemax.
Bro.
And you know Robert Kirkman, creator of The Walking Dead. This isn't a Walking Dead podcast, but all I'm going to say is that it sucks. I hate The Walking Dead. I was a huge fan. I was a massive fan of The Walking Dead. But I just watched the finale, and I was so disappointed of season 7.
Done. Just leave it at that.
I've had it.
Thank God for The Leftovers.
Zobel has also directed International Assassin, that episode as well, and Lens, that episode. So it looks like they've gotten the whole team back together. The DP was John Grillo, as always. And the song, the theme song for this week was the original theme song to The Leftovers.
Season 1. Season 1's theme.
That is correct. So I thought that was a very good callback to season 1. One of the many callbacks to season 1. And how everything is now starting to turn back in on itself. We return to the hotel. We have a whole bunch of callbacks.
Yep.
And now the mirror of what is happening at the beginning of season 1 and now the end of season 3, it is all now starting to rhyme.
Blake thinks that they're going to do the theme song to season 2 for the last episode.
Correct. I think the theme song for episode 8 will be Let the Mystery Be. That is my
Let the Mystery Be.
That way Mary can sing it again. Like I got on the phone to Damon, you know, a good personal friend of mine, and I said, "Look, Damon, listen. I know you're my good friend.
Except,
and my wife loves singing.
You like the Jets.
Other than that, it's a detail we'll look past. My wife loves singing that song. So, could you do me a solid and make it happen? And you know, the good man that he is, I think he's going to come through with it. All right. It is now time for the personal story.
Oh, here you go. You got the music going.
I found the music finally.
Good. It's about time. You only have one episode left.
the way that I relate to this story, and why I got emotional at the beginning and why I'm getting emotional now thinking about it is, as I said to you in the beginning of the
first episode
of this season three, I went through a very big bout of depression, and podcasting was one way that helped get me out. But I related to this episode because Kevin, he is depressed. There's no way around it. And he runs away from Nora and from his life. And he talked about being a coward. And that he was afraid to let Nora be with him. And I can relate to that because that depression turns things around on you, even to the ones that you love, and makes you do things you don't want to do and say things you don't want to say. And you put up a facade of a brave man, him wearing the police uniform. You put up a facade of trying to be a dad, trying to be a husband. And you think that you don't deserve the person that you want to spend the rest of your life with. And you are a complete contradiction the entire time. And it was tough. And watching him literally take the key out of his heart and having this conversation. I remember having a conversation with you at a restaurant where my wife, where you were like... just recently, as a matter of fact, you're like, your life is fucking awesome, and you need to recognize that, and you need to stop, and pulling the thing out of his heart is that conversation that you need to have, and that was a very special thing for me, and why I related to this episode, and I'm trying desperately to not be a coward. Very badly. All right. Enough of me being an idiot. That is how I related to this episode. Let's get down to it. So, let's talk about this real quick. Since I am such a blubbering idiot, it made me have all the feels. I think it's fantastic, and I want the Emmys to nominate The Leftovers badly, as so badly that I will cry on my podcast. We've put out a hashtag, a campaign that we've been trying to do, which is called hashtag leftovers for Emmys. And we want the Emmys to recognize the leftovers for how great it is and how it makes us feel. We've always talked about on this podcast that this show makes you feel. Whatever way you need to feel, whatever way you want to feel, it does what it needs to do, and it deserves to be recognized. So please, when you're done with this episode, listening to it either on your podcast or watching it on Facebook Live, please go to Twitter, go to Facebook, Instagram, do hashtag leftovers for Emmys, tag the Emmys, tag the leftovers, tag Jimmy Kimmel because he is such a big yeah. leftovers fan, and please get the word out, and that'll be awesome. So, all right, my love. Sorry, can't say that anymore. Spunky Misunderstood Genius.
Yeah.
How are we attacking this episode
today? I don't even know. I'm going to need some help.
Okay, well.
Let's start with one twin.
What do you mean?
I don't even know. There were two Kevins and like...
Let's just talk about how bonkers this episode was. Like, we've said this now multiple times. and I feel like, yes, it's been bonkers each time. But it gets exceedingly more bonkers with each successive episode.
Yes.
And, you know, normally we do have a whole plan here on our Google Notes and what we want to talk about and how we want to talk about it. But it is such an amazing experience to watch what we just mm-hmm. watched that it's almost kind of disingenuous to have a plan.
Yeah.
So...
Like I loved how I was totally cool and like, whatever, he's drowning himself. That's how far this show has pushed us, mm-hmm. that we understand what his plan is. We're totally knowing he's going to come back to life. Like, it's totally cool. That didn't even shock me. There were so many things in this episode that shocked me.
Right. Right.
And I thought, nothing's going to shock me anymore with this show.
Yep.
Boy, was I wrong.
Well, let's do this. Where would you place this episode in that world? Like, we've had International Assassin. We've returned to the hotel in I Live Here Now, the season two finale. We are now here again in the hotel world in the season three penultimate episode, the series penultimate episode. If you were to rank the hotel experience episodes, where are you going to rank them?
Like, I don't even know.
Like, where, like, International Assassin was amazing because it was the first time we'd ever been there.
Correct.
And you have Verdi, and, you know, and the music's going, and he's, you know yourself and know who you are and doing yourself accordingly, picking out the outfits, going down and killing Patty, spoiler alert, and going to the well and pushing little Patty down, spoiler alert. And all of the,
I liked this one better.
Yes, I think I would agree. I would agree.
Because I got to see Patty and Meg and two Kevins and so many other people, Dean, Soggy Kevin. I got to see all these people.
Right.
And for those of you who didn't know, Soggy Kevin, a.k.a. the Kevin that was accidentally drowned because he was a police chief in Australia named Kevin, he was the guy who helped when Kevin was president, get his face scanned and everything like that.
All right, so let's talk about why this episode really shouldn't work. Like, it going back to the hotel for the third time, it almost seems like it's going back to the well. It's like everybody loved International Assassin. Everybody loved Patty. Everybody loved...
Creepy.
Yes, it was creepy, Reese. Everybody loved this episode. Oh, okay. Okay. Everybody loved this episode. So let's just recreate it. And you should be like, okay, well, you know, going back to the hotel and nothing's going to surprise you. Also, like, the stakes that are at the hotel, you're not quite sure like what's really going on in real life. Does it really matter that we're here? Does it really matter? Are the stakes high enough for you? This is because this is the penultimate episode of the series.
Yeah.
The series.
I can't handle that.
And they're spending all this time, a full hour in a world that the mechanics of, you're not quite sure if it's just in Kevin's head or if it's a real thing. And what is actually happening here? So that's why it shouldn't work, in my opinion, because it's just completely ludicrous, the whole thing. But suddenly it does work because unlike International Assassin, there weren't any huge surprises here. But there are small things here that did work. I mean, the sheer craziness of it. I mean, Kevin being president of the United States, Kevin just being the International Assassin, bringing back all the characters that have deceased, not all of them, but most of them, the ones that really truly matter, and, you know, having the ridiculousness of a penis scanner. Like,
you need to find a different word for that.
The member scanner. And, you know... making the inside jokes about Justin Theroux and, you know, no one would go to that length, you know, that kind of thing. It works because it takes itself seriously, but not that seriously. Like, it knows what it's doing there. It knows what it has to accomplish.
And it did it in such a beautiful blend.
Right. And bringing back Craig Zobel is one of the best decisions they've made as the director. I mean, a huge... unbelievably great decision because he has that eye. He crafted the look for International Assassin.
Mm-hmm.
And to capitalize on that and make it even better, like the scene with the missiles coming down.
Oh my gosh.
And then he and Patty holding hands, recreating that same exact frame from International Assassin.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of Patty being the young one,
child,
she's older now. She's transformed because Kevin did that for her.
Yep.
How special is that, right? House, like, it's incredibly special. So it worked, right?
Oh, 100%. I have no idea what's going on, but it worked for me.
Right. And as big as this episode was, and as ridiculous as this episode could be, I say ridiculous, not in a bad way, but in a way that, like, it's just nuts. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, and it's freaking awesome watching it. And it is so big. We're talking President of the United States, nuclear war.
The world is over. Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, the episode really is about Kevin. The episode is really about him discovering his own depression. It's about him discovering what he has to do in order to go forward. It's about his relationship with Nora. As he reads that book, he discovers that he is a coward, that he does leave her. And he doesn't want to end up being like the guy in the unfinished love story that he writes.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to say, "I'm alone and all is well."
See, it's funny how you say that this is what the episode was about, was his depression and his love for Nora, because you don't realize that until the last, 5 minutes?
Oh, right.
I mean, so much of it, you're like, yeah, go find the kids, find out about their shoes, go find Evie, talk to Evie, and then you get to Christopher Sunday. Christopher Sunday's like, do you really think your dad's going to be able to sing? And that's when you start to say, uh-oh. What is Kevin doing here? Mm-hmm. If he doesn't really think his dad can sing and stop the flood, why is Kevin here? What is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin starts to realize that too.
Right. Everybody that he had a mission to go talk to,
Mm-hmm. Everybody
is telling him, what are you doing here? Why are you here?
And Evie is the one saying,
right, Evie is
love
the one.
And family. And,
right.
Mm-hmm.
And it culminates in Christopher Sunday, like you said, saying, do you believe your father? And he says, no. And Sunday replies, well, then why are you here? Because of that, we've talked about all season the ludicrousness of what belief can be and what you ascribe meaning for. And we have that quick moment of Michael asking, well, of people saying, hey, why are you doing this? And Michael turns around and says, well, you're not doing it for all of us. You're doing it for another reason. And it has a quick shot to Nora. Mm-hmm. And you internally think, oh, well, he thinks that Nora is gone, so he's going to that other land to go seek out Nora. And in at that moment, it makes a ton of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God, he wants to go find Nora. How cute is that? That's amazing. No, no. But you realize at the end when he's reading the book, yes, it's because of Nora, but not because he is running towards her, but because he is running away from her.
Yeah.
And having Patty be the one. Okay. The other reason why this episode works so well is because it takes everything that you think, that you know, about the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes everything that you think you know about Kevin and his relationship with other people and what it has been built up to be. Like you said, it's go talk to the kids about their shoes. Go tell Evie that I love her. Go get the song from Christopher Sunday. It takes everything that you think and it turns it on its head and says, nope, this is not what this is about. And the prime example of that is Patty.
How
you,
so?
You meet Patty, and she's the Secretary of Defense, and she's pushing Kevin around. Everyone is saying, oh my God, the Secretary of Defense is not going to be happy that you don't want to go to DEFCON 1. She is pushing Kevin into saying DEFCON 1. She tricks him to not make the phone call. When he finally goes down to DEFCON 1, the room locks down, the phones turn off, and you think, oh my God, she's doing it again to Kevin. She's torturing him. All the while, though, that is not exactly what is happening. In fact, she is the one that is helping Kevin.
Yeah.
She is the one that is making him get beyond this need to get away from Nora, right? She is the one. She is the one who's actually a protagonist. And Kevin is the antagonist in this episode. And that's why this episode is so effing brilliant, because it takes everything you know and says, it gives it two freedom rockets right here.
Can't believe you just did that on Facebook Live.
Sorry, I did.
And my child, luckily he doesn't know that sign language.
No, he does not. Thank you. Thank you. And it's also brilliant because, remember, like I said, they're both walking out hand in hand as the missiles come, and it's a beautiful shot, recreating the sky, the that vanilla sky kind of look from International Assassin at the well. Patty is the one finally helping Kevin. If you remember in International Assassin, Kevin is the one who helped her get past her dependent relationship on her husband, the abusive husband.
Yeah. Oh, Lori, I thought, helped.
Well, Lori did in the real world, but in International Assassin, Kevin was the one who killed the husband. And he was the one who heard about the Jeopardy story and talked about it with her and drowned her and got her past all of it. Patty is now returned to do the same favor for Kevin.
And but it's against him.
It's against him. It's his own adversary. Like, remember, season two, a most powerful adversary. They were referring to Patty against Kevin. But this year, it is Kevin against Kevin. It's that part of him. It's that when I was really in my depression, and it even came up last night, you have that little devil on your shoulder that tells you things, and it whispers, and it eats, and it just hacks away at the back of your brain.
The way I describe it to Blake is, I said, that little something on your shoulder is rewriting the story.
Right.
Isn't that weird that I always say that? And here's Kevin saying his story.
Right. And Kevin, he has the devil on his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
He has that little thing that makes him want to run. And he has done that not just for Nora, but for his entire life. At least specifically as it relates to Lori and his family. If you recall, in The Garveys at Their Best, Kevin says to his father, he tells him, I'm afraid that this is not enough. It's not enough. And Kevin's father, Kevin Sr., says, you know, talks about fighting windmills and all that other stuff. And every man is afraid to admit that this is it. And Kevin Jr. did not have the guts to recognize that this is enough. And finally, when he does go back to the hotel in season two, he does see that this is his family. He does sing. He does sing Homeward Bound. He does return home. He knows he has to admit it. But when he finally gets back home, there is that thing that still eats and gnaws and prevents him from wanting to be there. And when he has to fight himself, and he has to kill himself, and he has to kill that little devil on his shoulder, that's what he's doing by cutting his chest open.
For the key.
Because it's that one thing.
Cutting his heart.
Like, literally, his heart prevents him. Something in his heart prevents him from wanting to stay with Nora. It forces him mm-hmm. to run. And here he is, quite literally cutting it out, pulling it out, and using that devil to destroy the hotel world for him. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
It's heavy, man.
It's incredible. That one thing that prevents him from staying home is the one thing that kills the hotel world. Like, how beautiful. How amazing. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about the mechanics of the world. Is it really a purgatory? Is it in Kevin's mind? Is it a place where dead people go?
I see dead people.
Yeah, I know. I'm not too concerned with the mechanics of the world.
Yeah,
like,
me neither.
You know, do people know? Like, Christopher Sunday recognizes the conversation that he had with
Kevin's dad.
Kevin's dad. Some people out there are saying, well, maybe Christopher Sunday was just going along with the conversation just because. He was just saying, do you believe your dad? And without really recognizing the purpose of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Possible. Either way, I really don't think it matters. I think what matters most is that, again, like we said in International Assassin, it is real for Kevin. And as Clint Church says here in the Facebook group, let the mystery be. And you're damn right. I think we should all let the mystery be as it relates to the mechanics of this world.
Mm-hmm.
And just talk about it thematically. What do you think?
Oh, completely. I don't think I'm supposed to understand it. and I'm okay with that. I mean, kind of just like we aren't supposed to know what happened in The Departure. So for anyone who has been watching The Leftovers and now here in season 3 is like, I better at least understand the afterlife place. I don't think we're going to get an explanation, but you've been okay with not knowing exactly the mechanics behind The Departure. So it's more about relationships and how people respond and react with each other.
Fernanda Brasileiro on Facebook Live here asks, well, if he didn't believe it, then why was Kevin Jr. willing to risk dying for it? And ultimately, as...
If he didn't believe what?
If he didn't believe what was happening. Like, okay. If he didn't believe his father about the song, and if he...
I think it was like six of one, half dozen another. He can believe it, or he could die, and I think he would have been fine dying.
I think if it happened to work out,
yeah,
great. But I think he was willing to die because he was just willing to die. Mm-hmm. And if he went back there, great. If not, his pain and his problems, he was saying that he wasn't afraid, which is possible. And even if that were the case, that's probably more of a reason why he is just willing to die.
Mm-hmm.
Because he isn't afraid to die anymore. He is just thinking, I can get away. I can get away from everything because that one little devil in him is pushing him to get away. And that, I think that is really special and important, which reminds me of the cold open with Nora and Kevin. What did you think about the cold open in the bathtub with Nora and Kevin?
So morbid, so Nora, mm-hmm. right? Like, when I die, here's what I want you to do. I loved it. I loved this intimate little moment hearing Lily on the baby monitor.
Right.
Talking about something so morbid, but this is a morbid world that they live in. And this is how they roll. And just the laughter and the mutual respect and love. I loved the cold open, and it made me sad. I mean, I have not been a big fan of Nora this season. I love her as a character. I just have not been a big fan of her as a girlfriend or their relationship because they both have been drifting. This isn't all on Kevin. So I feel like there needs to be an extra like piece in his book that says it's not all your fault. Hello, it's
mm-hmm.
okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it takes two to tango. But I loved it. It reminded you. It reminded you of something that they had that was real and mm-hmm. that was good.
Right. I agree. It was funny. It was a little bit morbid. It was everything that I think Nora and Kevin wanted to be. You know, with the baby.
Except where would he want to be buried?
What do you mean?
Well, did he actually answer it?
No, he said he wanted...
To be stuffed.
Oh, to be stuffed. That's right. And she tells him that she wants to have the beard because if she's going to have sex with it, it's going to be dressed up the way that she wants.
Like, I kind of liked it because it was Nora being morbid, but also like real and just, okay, I'm going to want to be XYZ. I want to be cremated.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kevin just was able to be lighthearted. And then Nora was able to take that lightheartedness and raise it to a totally perverted level.
And that is Nora.
Exactly.
That is totally Nora. And why this episode also works is because there's a real balance, I feel like, between the real world, the one that we all exist in, the one that Kevin is in with Lori and everybody that's there. We go back and forth in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
We're not Because again, the hotel is a fun place. It's an interesting place. It is hyper real. We're watching Kevin be the president of the Guilty Remnant and talking about there is no marriage and going for his platform and reading this speech and talking about how this is not the first time he's visited the other side of the world, and it gets harder and harder each time he comes back. And then seeing Dean with a parachute and a gun and killing Russians.
Yes.
And here he is saying, don't look at reflective surfaces, and seeing the typewriter and like all really cool stuff. But if you have too much of it, you can get lost in it, and mm-hmm. it can seem to get silly. Which is why I think it's so important that they kept bringing back Kevin into the real world again, and having like the water come out of his mouth, and
yes,
you know, and seeing and telling his dad and John, I saw Evie, and I haven't talked to Christopher Sunday yet, and then also having his dad dunk him.
Oh my gosh, and hold him down in the tub.
And he says, Dad, you're going to have to hold me down.
Oh.
And he says, that's okay. If I could do it for you, I would. I feel like that's the first honest moment we've had between the two. Which is also ironic because, you know, Kevin Sr. is having this moment thinking, oh my God, this is a really special thing. I'm still part of this story.
I disagree with the word honest. I would say tender. Because I feel like they've been honest with each other in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think they both are kind of just all set with one another in season one. But they're honest, I feel like, almost all the time with each other. But right. Tender, I have not seen.
Right. Okay. All right. I'll give you that one. I will definitely give you that one. I think going back to the real world, whether it was tender or to see, you know, all the characters that we know, each time that Kevin either is pulled out of the water. Like, remember Kevin Sr. saying, I thought we would do this together. Is that Kevin Sr. being really honest? I thought we would do it together. Or is it, I just need to be a part of the story still. I just need to make this about me still. I think that is... An exceptional way to balance this episode and to make it work on a level that it needs to work. What do you think about Patty coming back?
Loved it.
Okay, because
where's my bell with Meg and Patty? Bring it on.
Yes.
Bam! Just like that, a winner.
That's right. There you go.
I'm proud. I'm proud I called that.
I'm very proud of you too. As a matter of fact, I also on. Social media
mm-hmm.
had called that Meg was going to be back, so I will take this too.
Bam.
Bells for everyone.
Like a winner.
That is right. That is right. Bells for everybody today. So I was afraid of Patty coming back. I was really afraid of it. What did you think of Patty coming back?
You were afraid of it?
Yeah, I thought bringing her back was... going to be disingenuous before watching this episode. Because Kevin handled it. He'd already dealt with Patty.
Yes.
Patty, to me, was what haunted Kevin. He dealt with it. He handled it. And it was time to move on. Bringing her, she already had a great send-off at the well. Why are we bringing her back?
This Patty made me think that this isn't the afterlife, that this is 100% in Kevin's head. Because this Patty... did not say, hey, you already killed me, right?
Yep.
She didn't say, thanks a lot for the well, jerk. She was like revamped, rebooted Patty.
Right.
So, I don't know. It kind of made me feel like, you know when you have dreams and then you kind of have the same dream again, but something's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it's a dream because you're like, oh, I've been here, but this isn't real life because... this wouldn't be happening.
Right.
I don't know. I love that he chose Patty as his Secretary of State. I think she was amazing and perfect and exactly how Patty would be in the GR sense of let's just end it. Let's just end this world. And that's what I feel like Patty from season one would have said. So I loved seeing her. How about you?
Yeah. She was brought out of retirement as she said. And I, it's by design. I loved his face when he was asked, okay, and who's your Secretary of Defense?
Yep.
And he just inherently knew that it was going to be Patty Levin.
Yes.
Like, oh my goodness gracious. And I remember seeing her for the first time and thinking, okay, where are we going
with this? I was hoping he was going to say Lori.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
I was really hoping for that. Because, you know, she's been his confidant.
Right. And it would technically confirm that she is dead then.
Yeah.
I mean, because it is in the hotel world.
And then he said Patty, and I was like, oh man, this is not going to end well.
Right.
Patty is not an optimist.
I think it's, I mean, like most of the episodes throughout this season, I'm watching it and I'm like, all right, where are we going here? Like, we're getting to the point where Kevin is talking to the kids and he's asking about their shoes. He's giving speeches and we're having, like we said, we're having Soggy Kevin back. Oh, by the way, Soggy Kevin with those bright blue, crystal blue eyes.
I couldn't
eyes.
Even focus. Soggy Kevin.
And
those are
throughout
beautiful.
The rest of the episode, they went back to normal. But in that one scene, it was bright, like
why?
Almost like a dog, one of those snow dogs, like blue. You know what I mean? Like, it was.
I did not watch the show as closed captioned, so I don't know if there are dogs barking. But yes.
I remember thinking, okay, where are we going here? What are we doing? And I didn't get it. And even towards the end, it was kind of like, did we just watch all this? And then we read the book and it is what it is. A lot of people will say, well, you just wasted an hour of my time.
I feel like I could have ended the series with that episode.
You literally ripped the words out of my mouth.
Rip.
I mean, here, give me.
Oh. Thanks. I have no idea what they're going to do next episode.
Literally, no. And again, this is the second week in a row I've challenged listeners to tell me where they think this show is going.
Yeah.
And you know how many answers I got?
How many?
Zero. Bupkis, baby. And it's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Can I give you one?
Yes.
Aliens will come down and say we did it. And then Damon and Tom will say, thank you, Mary Larson, for penning the ending.
Yeah, I know, right?
No, seriously. Like, this episode, complete bookend to this season's premiere.
Yep.
To pretty much the series premiere. You know, if you think about just seeing so much of the GR and having them be these outcasts that were beat up and, like, were the lesser man. And then to know that they took over the world and in Kevin's mind. Mm-hmm. And to see Kevin come to grips with his depression and his love and his lack of family.
Right.
I don't know what they're going to do next episode.
I have no idea. And so why this episode is not a waste of time in light of what they're apparently going to try to do for the finale. I mean, who knows, really? It's just, again, highlighting Kevin's depression and showing where he retreats to. And it is not a place to be celebrated. It's a place to where things happen and people find themselves there. Mm-hmm. And if you want to call it purgatory, I mean, okay, fine, you know, whatever. But it's making him face throughout the seasons, you know, season two, season three, it's making him face himself. And it's so powerful because he realizes that he's effed things up with Nora. And he even says it as God Only Knows is playing in the background from the Beach Boys. And I love those lyrics too. God Only Knows Where I'd Be Without You.
Yeah.
And, you know, God Only Knows where Kevin would be without that portion of his life. That portion, that little devil eating at him. Would he, God only knows how amazing it could be, how amazing his life could have been. He realizes that he screws up with Nora. But not only that, we have this moment with Kevin and his father at the end. And his father says, what now?
Yeah.
Because the world does not end. I remember getting a little worried because mm-hmm. they're saying, "Oh, the rains, the pond
it was
is
coming
flooded."
Down. Yeah,
and they have that great shot of Michael and John holding him, and they're walking towards the house, and I was like, "Oh my God, are they really going to do this flood thing? I really hope not." And it doesn't happen, and we end on Kevin Sr. sitting on top of the house with the ladder.
Oh, so good.
As it was mentioned earlier, bookending.
But rather than being left by family, his family joins him.
Right. So it's again, we talked about this at the beginning, a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to rhyme now, and it's folding in on itself, which again is probably why they played the first theme from season one, which is amazing. And Damon Lindelof and Tom Perrotta have actually been approached about this. And before the season even debuted, one of the themes they described as this season is what happens when the world doesn't end? What's the point? Like, what happens after that? When everyone thinks, oh my goodness gracious, the world is ending, and all of a sudden it doesn't. And then it manifests itself in Kevin Sr. saying, what now? We, the viewers, are asking, holy crap, like, what did we just watch? Where did we go? What did we see? And what is going to happen now?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody on the planet is in the same boat right now, like our planet, our world, the real world, because the major critics got all the first seven episodes of The Leftovers. They withheld, HBO withheld the final episode.
Awesome. So smart, HBO.
So now everybody is in the same boat.
Okay, so are we talking about what we think is going to happen, or do we need to dissect anything from this episode aside from the fact that major props to the humor that was added in this episode, generally all male organ body part related jokes, to lighten it? I mean, think about it. Everyone was saying we laugh, we cry, we got tense, we got nervous, and then they throw another male anatomy joke at you.
Hey, you know, it happens.
This episode was unbelievable.
It was
how did he keep spitting that much water?
I don't know. Maybe he took Epicac. Oh. I've been called out on this. People have said I have to go back and watch
Lori's vomit.
Yeah, Lori's vomit, and that it's clearly she's wearing a wig of some sort, and clearly she has some kind of little thing in her mouth that's spouting out this. I'm just saying, I feel like it was real. I'm just going to throw it out there. And what this episode really serves for me in the end, why it matters, why it's important, is because of Kevin's arc as a character. This episode felt like this was a traditional, I use traditional in air quotes, because...
Yeah.
It's the end to the traditional Leftovers story. I think it is the end cap to all the strange, crazy things that have happened in this show. The hotel world is now destroyed. I mean, it's now gone for Kevin.
He wasn't even in the hotel. Wasn't that interesting?
Right. It's even better. Like, but that world now is destroyed. That's the end.
Yeah.
So all of that... It feels like the magic part of The Leftovers is now over. And now we're going to focus ourselves on the characters. And we're going to focus ourselves on the relationships that they all share.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why I say this is an end cap to the crazy things that have been happening. Yes, it was fun to go to the hotel world. It was fun to get all the callbacks. Dean and the sweatpants and Verdi. And instead of coming out of a bathtub, he comes out of the ocean. You know, like it shows you how big this could be. You know, it's not just a bathtub. It's not just a hotel room. It's now a beach.
Well, even with Meg being like there to be the more middle ground person.
Right. And she's the one saying, I fell in love with God. And how great was it that, you know, David Burton is in his ear, yes, and he's guiding him, and another great callback to David Burton being God. And mm-hmm. we finally found out what was said on the bridge by David Burton to Kevin. He said that he told him he was the most powerful man
yep.
in the world.
Yep.
And he is. And he is. And it's great.
Because, in his own world.
And in his own world, because he has the ability to end that world. He has the ability in his own world to forge his own life. He has his own ability to create his own destiny. So he is the most powerful man in the world unto himself.
Correct. In your own mind.
So why I'm saying all this is because Kevin's arc as a character is relatively complete now. He went from season one admitting, like I said, to his father that he was not happy with his family. He wondered what else there was beyond being just a father and a husband and a good person. He even says himself to the woman he cheated on Lori with, "I'm not a good person." Mm-hmm. And then in season two, he sees the hotel world and he realizes that he lost Nora. He lost his family that he rediscovered.
He lost Lori in season two.
Yeah, he lost Lori. Yeah. He lost Nora. He lost everybody. I mean, remember, Nora took off in season two.
Okay, yes.
Granted, it was kind of selfish of her to take off the way that she did, but TV's best girlfriend.
No.
At the time. And in season one, at the finale, he rediscovers his family. He rediscovers the fact that he has Nora. He has Lily. Tommy is back with Lori. And then they all come together at the end of season two as he's walking back from the vet hospital with John Murphy. He opens the door and there's Nora. There's Matt. There is Janelle Maloney. There is Lori. They're all there. Jill is there. Tommy is there. Lily is there. And it ends on his face, laughing, crying, tears of joy. The end. But then season three comes and he realizes, yes, he has his family, but it takes work. And even though he has his family, even though Nora is there, Lily is now gone, and they aren't, he and Nora, doing what they said they would do, mm-hmm. which is be honest with each other and yep. tell each other the truth. Give themselves over to each other. They both felt like, I can't be real with this person for whatever it is, for whatever reason. Kevin just wants Nora to be happy. Nora feels like Kevin's a little crazy. Mm-hmm. Talking to dead people. Weird, okay? So ultimately, it drove them both apart. But now we have Kevin recognizing that devil on his shoulder has pushed him to this place of ugliness.
Yeah.
And he has to go find Nora. And he has to get her back.
She's going to be a little microwaved.
He recognizes that he has to, that he has to be part of a marriage. He has to be part of something that is bigger than just him, bigger than just what he feels is good for him. He finally recognizes. I remember Patty saying, "I want you to understand." At the time, she's referring to, in season one, she says, "I want you to understand," before she cuts her throat.
Ugh.
Do you understand? And at the time, I think she's recognizing that there is no family, there is no life, there is no world, because it's all been ripped away. And at the time, it makes sense, but now he finally does understand. It is the opposite of what he was
doing.
Not only in the real world, but in the hotel world as the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. There is marriage. There is family. He wants to go home. And that final realization is the final arc of Kevin's character. Now he just has to act on it. Do I feel like this is going to be a happy, big, happy love story and they see each other in the end and yada, yada? I don't know. I don't know. I feel like that's a little trite. And I feel like that is certainly not what Damon Lindelof is going at here.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be a portion of what he's trying to go after, but I don't think he's going to, it's too neat to do it like that.
Okay.
So, you know what I mean? So there has to be something else at play, not just, hey, you're going to find Nora and everything's going to be happy-go-lucky. No, woo!
Oh, no, it's not.
No, I don't think that's going
to happen. And we got that from the first episode of this third season. We know it's not going to be happy.
Right. All right, you ready to do some listener feedback, my darling?
Yes, I am.
Let's do it. All right. At the Gearson on Twitter says, did this episode just give us a hint / possible explanation for the destination of the non-leftovers? Meaning the hotel world, the people that die, they go to the hotel world? And do they... Is that where they reside? Again, if you want to believe that, I think that's great. If you don't want to believe that, I also think it's great. Again, the mechanics of this world, in my opinion, don't necessarily matter to the story. It's Kevin's journey throughout the story is what matters.
Yeah,
I
just figured now that 100% is just Kevin's mind. That's how I feel, since Patty was so different.
Yeah, and having Patty be who she is, mm-hmm. and serving what Kevin needed. I mean, I think that's I think that's what matters most. Terry Pitnick on Twitter says, it's funny, Senior, who is so self-absorbed, he never thinks it might have been Junior who saved the world, the guy who can actually come back from the dead.
Senior was just so, exactly, he just kept thinking it was all about him.
Lucy Guerrero on Facebook says, 5 Damons, of course, it's so bittersweet to watch this show end. And that is really the truth. I'm not ready for this show to, like, I'm dying to know what happens. I'm dying to, like, see it, but I don't want it yet. if that makes sense. Sarah Doss says on Facebook, 5 Damons, things are really coming to an end. Aw, poor Kevin Sr. He really needed to stop that rain to feel like his life had purpose or meaning. This whole episode seemed so off the wall at first, but then I realized how it's all so relatable and realistic.
Well, at least the rain stopped.
I know.
Kevin Sr.
Greg Cuoco says, 5 Damons, and more if possible. And yes, Greg, we do have a category for that, for the very special episodes. It is what I gave, the 108 number. Brilliant use of the two Kevins as the two sides of him come together to realize that he has been scared and really does love Nora. Over and over, he is asked, what do you want? And in the end, he realizes he must destroy his hiding place by launching the missiles. Interesting that he finally turned it around to what he wants after God / David Burton misquotes Machiavelli. The actual quote is, if they rely on help, they always fail and never accomplish anything. But when they can rely on their own ability and can use force, they are rarely endangered. Hence, it is that all armed prophets have conquered and the unarmed prophets have been destroyed. And if you remember, that is when Kevin is asking God, are you going to give me a gun? Like, what are we going to do here? I have to raid this place. I have to go kill the president. And he says, you don't need one. You know, the people without weapons usually succeed most. And then he finally follows it up by saying, Kevin stops doing what others tell him and acts on his own. There is so much in this episode. Nice use of nuclear deterrent ideas that were thought of in the past, such as putting a capsule with the launch codes inside of a person, much the same as the key idea in this episode. Can't wait to see what happens in the end. And you know what I also thought about this too?
Tell me.
I also thought about the question that the scientists ask all the people before they send them, before they microwave them. Would you kill a baby?
To
cure cancer. Yeah. Similar kind of deal. I thought that was a really cool parallel for these people. At Governing Frost says, if this show doesn't win at least one award, I will seriously go find Patty myself.
Oh my God, love it. Emma DZ says, holy cow, that wasn't expected. The end credits, though, all I could think of was Girl Interrupted. Anyone else?
Same. It was the same song as Girl Interrupted.
Oh, okay. Mark S. Triplett gave it 5 diamonds, but that great Beach Boys song will never be the same for me.
I wanted to ask you this. Did you think the use of God Only Knows was correct there? Like,
was that when he was ripping himself apart?
Right.
Well, I had my head under a blanket. Like, literally gets that little scalpel thing, and those things freak me out so much that that is when I put it over my head. And I was asking Blake for a good 2 solid minutes. Can I look now? Nope.
Definitely not.
Can I look now? Nope. Nope. Stay under that blanket. Nope. So I did not really watch that those 2 minutes, nor did I really hear the Beach Boys song because I was hidden under a blanket.
I mean, he literally had his whole arm in the other, like elbow deep in the other Kevin, like, and blood was spurting out. Like,
gross. Okay, Melissa Schmidt Ducote gives it 10 Damons, double the Kevin, double the Damons. Can I just say how the music of the series never fails me? It always works in bringing all those emotions to the surface. And what an incredibly fine actor Justin Theroux is. My goodness. And Patty, it was like seeing an old friend. I'm not going to lie. I was hoping to see Lori as the vice president, but I'm happy to have seen Meg as well. Patty and Kevin holding hands as the world dies felt very Tyler Marla to me at the end of Fight Club, and I loved it. Mm. Surprisingly, I'm at a place where I feel happy with the series ending because I'll get to start it all over again whenever I feel like it. The ending is feeling right, and I hope the finale keeps the momentum. I'm less worried about where they went or all the mystic happenings, but more about how everyone moves on from this point. This series for me, in 2 words, metaphysical beauty. And you know what Melissa said, I love. Less worried about where they went, and I'm more concerned on how everyone moves on.
Right.
Love.
100%. And by the way, I was bringing up God Only Knows earlier because, you know, that's one of those songs that is frequently used in television or in movies.
Must be cheap.
Yeah. And I thought it was great. But, you know, a lot of people have used it.
Love Actually.
And The Leftovers has been anything but redundant or like it really hasn't copied much. It's kind of stood on its own in many different ways. Of course, it has taken some things like Where Is My Mind? That was clearly taken from Fight Club, which was fine.
Yeah.
But at least it was a different version. It was the piano version, which was really cool. So using this, like, You're the One That I Want, like a song that has been used many times, remember in season 2, but they took that other version, like that weird, slow version. Would you rather have them take a weird, slow version of God Only Knows, or did you like the fact that they used the actual Beach Boys version? Like, I like the fact that they've taken things that have been used, but used them in different ways and in different versions.
I haven't thought about that, how it was still just the original version compared to all the little remixes.
Like even Metallica with Apocalyptica in the cellos and all different stuff, widely used, but different versions. You know what I mean?
But maybe this is showing us Kevin is finally different. He's thinking differently.
Oh, good one. I like that.
He needs to be honest and be original with himself.
I like it. All right, David Kozlowski.
I'm getting deep with Beach Boys.
On Facebook says, 2.5 Damons for each part of Kevin Garvey Jr. Did he just blow up the whole afterlife just to get back to Nora after he literally had to face himself? Why, that's commitment. He chose life, chose to live, and found peace while simultaneously abandoning the place that he offered the easy way out. Bitter, sweet oblivion. For any other show, this could have been a season finale, much like Damon's other infamous show before it perused the idea that we get a second chance in the next life.
We have to go back, Kate.
Here we offered a choice once again. However, we may choose, though. Real life is happening around us. People we need and care about are more important than a fantasy world where we are presidents and assassins. There you have it, folks. Love wins.
See, I don't know if he knew he'd be able to go back to the real world this time. Do you think he knew when he blew everything up with nukes that he was going to go back to the real world with his dad? I kind of felt like he was just done. He was ready to actually be over.
That's a valid point because there's no assurance that he was able to go back.
Yeah.
And he didn't necessarily say, all right, I have to go back to fix things with Nora. It was, hey, we fucked up with Nora.
Yeah. And that was kind of his like, all right, let's die. Let's bomb the world.
Let's just, we effed up. Let's.
Didn't he say to Patty? He was like, I just want it to be over.
Right. I just take this thing out of me. I don't want to come back here again. Like it has to be over.
Yeah. I didn't think he did it to get back to Nora. I just think he wanted to exit.
Claudia Pesci says, Five Damons, hands down, the best episode of The Leftovers yet. Every single second of this episode was absolutely riveting. It made me laugh, cry, apparently me too, shout, what the F, all at once. Outstanding performance by Justin Theroux. Still trying to process what it all meant, but it was huge for Kevin Jr. to realize how he blew it with Nora. And John Champion says, this is exactly what I wanted from season three with regards to Kevin's arc throughout the series. I had a few thoughts about things that cropped up in the episode and harked back to previous episodes. One, in International Assassin, on his way back to talk to Gladys, Kevin is escorted by an armed security guard through a corridor where he walks past someone in his Mapleton Police Department uniform with a bag over their head, which we can now infer was his identical twin brother. Assassin Kevin also sported a big black bag over the head in this episode. Remember that. Assassin Kevin was brought in into the bunker, sat down, and Patty takes the big black bag off of his head. And then she starts singing the theme song to Patty Duke, the old television show. But she just changed the words for Kevin. So remember that. Kevin is sitting down, takes the black bag off of his head, okay. And then we have both Kevins sitting far away from each other.
But he's not in a Mapleton uniform.
It doesn't necessarily matter. It's inferring back to season two with a guy who was wearing a Mapleton Police Department uniform, wearing that black bag.
Why does Kevin have a twin? Does he really have a twin? No, he doesn't.
No, but it's the duality of Kevin Garvey.
Is it kind of like Black Swan?
Yes. Yes, it is kind of like Black Swan.
Oh my God.
It's that other, like in Black Swan, Mila Kunis is a real person, obviously. But Natalie Portman is projecting Mila Kunis unto herself.
Yeah.
Because that portion of Natalie Portman that needs to come out, that needs to become the Black Swan, that portion of Natalie Portman is Mila Kunis. Everything that Mila Kunis was in the real life in within the context of that film is what Natalie Portman needed to become. So when she says at the end, it's my turn, and then shoves the glass right into her stomach.
And how appropriate. Kevin shoves a thing scalpel right into him.
Look at this.
They should have named this episode Black Swan.
At the end of this episode, John Champion says, Kevin wakes up in the half-built church wrapped in white.
Wrapped in white? What's going on there, where? Wibbity wascally wabbit.
Okay, fine. There you go. Wrapped in white, harking back to the cold opening in the Book of Kevin when the woman who was spending the night on the roof lied down next to the corpses, wrapped in white in the church. And this show has transcended what we know television to be. I love it endlessly. And John J. Adair says, Five Damons for sure. I was thinking since Kevin has died and resurrected a bunch of times now, this Jesus thing won't ever die. And the only way to live a peaceful life is to go into hiding. Now that his internal demons have been exorcised and he can freely and willfully love Nora, he goes to find her. She realizes her kids are really gone, has a similar internal demonizing exorcism in the finale, and gladly accepts Kevin back. But in order to live peacefully together without Kevin Jesus followers tracking them down, they have to assume new identities.
Oh.
So when Sarah, who is future Nora, or otherwise known as we say, not Nora, is asked if the name Kevin meant anything to her, her answer always will be no. Imagine that. And the final thing from Justice Seymour, an email.
Hold on. There we go. This episode, crazy bonkers, cray cray, Bananaramas and Santas. But this was an interesting episode. Of course, like many episodes, you can divide it into themes and metaphors. And you could take it literally or go crazy with the logistics of the afterlife and how it works and what it means. Or you could take a special mix or none at all. This is all getting confusing, so I'm going to divide it into two sections, thematic and logistics. I don't know what you call the second thing. Okay, so is this thematic? Kevin is there because of Nora. Right after he and Nora had their fight, he ran away and let himself get swept up into this weird flood thing that doesn't quite make sense. In the other world, Patty truly seems to be there to help him snap out of his dumb fantasy and realize that he's just trying to disconnect himself or distract himself from how he and Nora left off. The book he wrote can maybe be seen as his subconscious, something that has what Kevin is really thinking about is between the pages. What I think is interesting is that it didn't go into the normal trope of him battling himself, as we see they are both him. And when they both realize they effed up, they go ahead and destroy the world, never to return again until he dies of natural causes or whatever. Okay, the logistical side. Mainly my geek out success, my geek out session, because since Kevin blew up the world in the other place, maybe that's why nothing happened in the real world, because everything seemed to be opposite in the other world, like Evie, how she died in her relationship with the GR. But it was cool how they switched players. Like it was the GTA 5 or something. What does that even mean?
Meaning like Kevin could go back and forth between President Kevin and...
Oh, by looking in the mirror?
By looking in the mirror.
Okay. Didn't understand that. Also, my brother Jacob was talking about how everyone in this world are people that Kevin knows to be dead. And maybe it's not the afterlife after all, but just his own dream state. I'm agreeing with this. We can confirm that he can die and come back to life, but nothing else is really set in stone when it comes to the afterlife. Episode in general gets five Damon's awesome stuff. When John hears about Evie and his glasses fogged up and the tears, they were amazing. Mm. I can't imagine how Senior felt when the flood didn't happen and his son was still dead. Okay. Side note, Kevin's speech about how marriage is illegal and stuff, I wonder if he didn't want to marry Nora or if it was her decision, but they weren't together a long time without getting married, so maybe he never even asked. I don't know. Also, Kevin is so immature. His code is 6969.
You know, I think that is one way to interpret it, although I think the code being 6969 to get into the bunker, uh-huh, or into the communications room, that to me screams duality. It screams
twin.
It screams twin. It also screams the yin and yang, black and white. Notice how President Kevin was wearing white.
And just another perverted joke. I mean, yeah. It's like perfect. It's like let's.
It's like it's all of the above.
Everything.
But Assassin Kevin's wearing black.
Yeah.
President Kevin's wearing white. They're both fighting each other. Mm-hmm. Duality. Amazing stuff. And Andrew Steer says, I saved this one special for me.
Good.
Okay. He says, four Damons. Wow. This is the only person I've seen with four Damons. I love every show, but I'm getting frustrated because I'm worried we won't get any answers. However, I am a New England Patriots fan.
Yay!
And we have a saying around here that goes like this: in Bill, we trust. And we say this because Bill Belichick has never let us down. And every time he does something crazy that we question, he always comes through. So now, for now, I'm going to say in Damon, we trust, because he has never let me down. And I cannot wait for the finale. And yes, Andrew, this one is for you.
Bam! Just like that.
That's my fellow New Englander right there. That is someone bringing up Bill Belichick and the Patriots. That you just get me. You understand. We are on the same wavelength. In Bill, we trust 100%. And in Damon, we trust 100%.
It's time for the Tweet of the Week.
All right. This week's Tweet of the Week is actually a tie.
Ooh.
Angela Hickey tweets out, it says, five Damons, a penis scan? Ugh. Only after an afterlife of Kevin Garvey would have a penis scan for an ID. And that thunk, is it a penis or a dumbbell?
I don't even know what they used in the sound.
And we also have one from Carl Peluso, who says they must win because only the leftovers would use this, the penis scanner, as a secondary biometric screeners. Hashtag leftovers. For Emmys. Oh, you know what I realized, no. My darling? We actually have some voicemails that we have to get to as well.
Okay.
So, though, congratulations for being Tweet of the Week.
Yes.
All right, let's get into the voicemails.
Hey, Mary and Blake. This is Jordan calling from Fresno, California.
Hey, Jordan.
Holy shmoly. I just finished the episode, and I'm almost at a loss for words. It was so beautiful. I loved how it kind of was a bookend, really, to Kevin's story. He's come full circle. And I love how Patty kind of said that, you know, with the two Kevins, they are bookends to each other. I really appreciated that we finally got this Kevin's story coming full circle, and that he finally was coming to terms with his fear of running and being afraid of moving on. And I think that's what I love so much about this show is that it gives us a look into each of these characters' fears and how they deal with all of their loss and the things that they are working through. I'm so, so excited for next week, but I'm also so sad as well, because this show has been fantastic and this community that you guys have built, all you fellow lefties out there, I'm going to be really sad to not be coming back every week, you know, for the podcast. Anyways, before time runs out, the only other thing I wanted to say was how we need this show. We need more shows like this that really talk about the human condition in a way that is beautiful and brilliant and thought-provoking, and that makes us think. And it's kind of hippy-dippy of me to believe, I guess, but we really do just need that connection with each other, and I think that's what this show is providing for us. It's really cathartic, and it's brilliant and beautiful. Anyways, I'm rambling on, so I love all you guys. Can't wait to hear the podcast tomorrow, and looking forward to talking about this episode. And then next week, oh my God, I'm going to cry. I know I'm going to cry all night long. Okay. Bye guys. Thanks.
Jordan, don't worry about it. I cried enough for you already in this podcast. You know, he did bring up something that I do want to talk about, which is this show does serve as a cathartic experience for people who want that cathartic experience. It does operate on a level that not many shows do. It's just so much better than everything else. It does everything. The writing, the direction, the DP work, all of it is just on. It's like going to MIT instead of going to, like, you know, Western State Technical, you know, school. Like, you're at MIT level with The Leftovers, mm-hmm. And not just in a cerebral way, which is true, but in everything else, it is so much better. The only shows that I know that operated on this level with everything, Breaking Bad operated on that level. I think Breaking Bad was better than everything else for the most part.
Not think, better than The Leftovers.
No. But like, it's on the same level. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's
okay.
You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. it's just on par. Breaking Bad, perhaps Game of Thrones, Lost, certainly.
The beauty of The Leftovers is that they know that they're like a quick candle, and
right.
They didn't have that middle season or middle couple seasons where they treaded water for a little bit, mm-hmm. which a lot of those other great shows on television have had. You know, where you have those episodes right. where you're like, God, that was useless. There was no such thing as a useless episode.
There was no Jack's Tattoo episode. You know what I mean? Yes. Even though I love the Jack's Tattoo episode, there was no Jack's Tattoo
so
episode.
So unnecessary.
We have to go back, Kate.
I can't think of many other shows. I challenge the listeners to let us know what you think. Let's get to the next one.
Hey, Mary and Blake, it's Preston from Alabama.
Hey, Preston.
I just wanted to say that the most powerful man in the world and his identical twin brother is exactly what I've been talking about since, I don't know, episode 3, the one with Nora, or maybe it was episode 4, I don't know. The one when Nora wanted to go up and kill herself. It's exactly what I've been talking about. all of these people just want to die. And Kevin is saying, why do you want to die? Why do you want to kill yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you want to do these things? Is it because you feel this purpose? Is it because of your father? Is it because of God? Why is it? And it's just because he hasn't been honest with himself and with Nora. And it's just like I've been saying, like, why do you want to kill yourself? Why isn't Nora what you're thinking about? And so I'm certain that, like I said, if Kevin has some kind of mystical or just life purpose, it's all wrapped up in Nora. And this episode gave me exactly that. And Kevin came to the realization that this isn't what I want. I don't want to die. I really want to live. And that's what I've just been wanting for Kevin to do all, like, three seasons. And, you know, Kevin hasn't cried all season long. And that's what I loved about The Leftovers, is, like, every friggin' episode, you can pretty much count on Kevin crying. And here, he's not crying for any reason. He just wants to get back to Nora. And that whole scene with pulling out the heart, ugh, blah. I had to cover my eyes from most of it, but it's what Kevin has to do. Like, get rid of this part of yourself that wants to die. Stop trying to make some excuse to get away from your life. Just live it. And the living of things is hard, but it's worth it because that's what life is. So anyway, I hope you guys loved The Most Powerful Man in the World and his identical twin brother.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Preston, we did love that episode. And, oh my God, it's so freaking good. Actually, what Preston said, it actually reminded me of something. And it reminded me to get back to this after we're done.
Okay.
This is Rafe Collins Jr. Hi, guys. It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel like crap.
That was it?
That was it. That was the end. Rafe, that was freaking awesome. What a way to end that out.
Oh,
what a great message.
Perfect.
I feel like crap too, man.
I feel like crap.
So, yeah. you know, that was awesome. That was so great. Okay. Throughout Kevin reading the book, as Mary drops her headphones, throughout Kevin reading the book at the end of this episode,
yeah,
it was very emotional for me, obviously, clearly, as you heard at the beginning of our episode here. But it also reminded me of Kevin reading a passage when they bury Patty. And it's important because I also got emotional during this scene as well. And I have the sound here and I want to play it because I think I could listen to Justin Theroux read, even though he's not like the best reader on the planet. I can listen to him read and act and get emotional every single day for the rest of my life. And I just wanted to play this because I think it's apropos and germane to what we're discussing here.
If I go to the east, he is not there. If I go to the west, I do not find him. When he is at work in the north, I do not see him. When he turns to the south, I catch no glimpse of him. But he knows the way that I take. When he has tested me, I will come forth as gold. My feet have closely followed his steps. I have kept to his way without turning aside. I have not departed. Not departed from the commandment of his lips. I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my daily bread. But he stands alone, and who can oppose him? He does whatever he pleases. He carries out his decree against me, and many such plans he still has in store. That is why I am terrified before him. When I think of all this, I fear him. God has made my heart faint. The Almighty has terrified me. Yet I am not silenced by the darkness, by the thick darkness that covers my face.
So I wanted to play that because Kevin is reading about being terrified, but in this episode he recognizes that he truly is terrified. And it may not be God, but it is as close to God as he can get. It is close to the relationship that one could have with God, but instead of it being God, it is Nora. He is terrified of Nora, and he is terrified of everything that he has potentially lost and needs to find that again. So that is why I played that, and that is that. So, my love, Spunky Misunderstood Genius.
Yes.
You ready for the sudden theory of the week?
Yes.
All right, Marvin, you got anything for me?
Nope.
What's new? All right. You know, I'm just going to play this again because it is what it is.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
You know? I'm so happy that I have that new sound, by the way. I'm so happy that I have that new sound. Okay, my sudden theory of the week. I was going to cop out again and say that I'm just going to double down on Kevin dying next episode.
Okay.
But I'm not going to cop out.
Okay.
Because I thought of something really cool.
Tell me.
We are not going to see future Nora.
Like Sarah Nora?
We're not going to see not Nora.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like the season premiere. We're going to see why Nora becomes Sarah.
Okay,
but
yeah.
But that... the cold open, or not the cold open, but the ending of this of the premiere will stand on its own.
Bike Nora and with the doves.
We're gonna understand the context.
Yes.
But we're not gonna see future Nora.
Okay.
Or not Nora.
Okay.
In that respect. And that is that.
Please hang up and try again.
All right. You ready for the final thoughts?
Yes.
Where is my final thoughts? Oh, here it is. All right, my love. Final thoughts as we go to the finale, the final countdown for The Leftovers. This is literally the final countdown. We are getting to the finale. What do you got for me, Mobby? Your final thoughts?
Well, first and foremost, October 14th this year is a Saturday, so all lefties should be having some kind of a party for Shoah on October 14th, right? Because it's over next week.
Right.
It's over, and yet our discussions will not be over. This fandom will not be over. Go out with a bang next Sunday night. Mm-hmm. Invite people over who like this show. You know, the thing that I realize now with The Leftovers is the more I talk about it, the more I find people who watch it, like random people who watch it. So find those random people and be like, come over. Come over Sunday night because we're going to have a lot to talk about. I'll bring wine. You bring chips and guac, and we'll just chat, man. So find your lefties.
Hold on, wait. Hold on.
It's the final countdown.
Sorry, go ahead. Continue.
That's it. Those are my final thoughts. It's nothing related to the show at all because I have no idea what's going on.
Just enjoy the fact that we have the ending coming.
Yes.
And don't cry because it's over. Be happy because it happened. You can guarantee that I'm going to say that next episode. For myself, I think what's important is the fact that we have now wrapped up each character. Like I said, we all have seen people do things in the Leftovers world that they haven't necessarily wanted to do or thought they would ever do. We saw Lori make her choice in life. We saw her, you know, possibly commit suicide. We saw Matt lose his faith. We see John try to talk to Evie. And
she had a voicemail.
Oh, she did? I didn't see it. I didn't get it. Uh-oh. I'm sorry, Missy. I don't have your voicemail. So ultimately, the rain has stopped and the world is not ending. Everything that has been built up for this season is kind of not there anymore. And we now have to face what is coming. And we don't know what's coming. And I couldn't think of a better way to get into the finale. I couldn't think of a better way to expose ourselves to what the final chapter of The Leftovers has in store for us. So I think it's the perfect way to end this penultimate episode. Perfect way. And to wrap up Kevin's character as well.
I concur.
Just freaking unbelievable. So, you ready to close out this show?
Yeah, I am.
God, I'm not ready to close out the show yet. I'm really not. I don't want it to be over. I'm not ready to get into the finale yet. I'm not ready.
Don't worry, you've got a couple more days. And then it is over. And we're all going to hear this music for the rest of our lives and just cry because it was such a short run, but such a great run. And as I said, you know, it's a short run, but they really didn't have any fluff. And for that, I'm thankful.
Yeah, no fluff. No fluff whatsoever.
When you do decide to rewatch The Leftovers, whether it's next Monday, or if you need to digest and it's a few months from now, or even a year from now, or whatever, I feel like when I rewatch it, I'm going to look forward to each episode mm-hmm. versus when I rewatch other series, I'm like, oh, crap. Do we need to watch this one at all? Like, right. Does anything come out of this one? So I am thankful for that. I am thankful for Damon and Tom and their creative team for making such a succinct and thought-provoking show. And I am really excited for this finale. And I'm just so thankful for the community that has been created out of this show.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you want to continue engaging with that community, even after The Leftovers has ended, and you like what Mary and I do, and if you think we bring enough value to you in your Leftovers experience, or what you would want to experience with us, please visit Mary and I at maryandblake.co. That is our website where everything that we do is there. All of our podcasts, all of our blogs, everything we do is at maryandblake.co. We would appreciate it if you joined us for the rest of our podcasting careers. We would appreciate it if you joined us for the rest of our blogging careers. And we think this community, as Mary has said, is an exceptional community, and one that has caused a lot of great experiences, and it really has helped save me. And I owe you for that. And I will continue to owe you, and I will never be able to repay you. So please continue to join us on our journey as we go forward. Luckily, we have one more episode left of The Leftovers.
Yay. So don't forget, join us on Facebook Live, send in your voicemails, send in your emails, your tweets. Tune in, man. Tune in.
Go to thelivingreminders.com to get all of our episodes there. And you can always reach us on Facebook, well, or Twitter or anything. All of our handles are at Living Reminders. And that's about it, my darling. That's all we got.
Until next time, folks, I'm Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And we're still here.